Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic. I want to welcome you to a very special topic, which is on Tarot, which I will continue to pronounce incorrectly because I'm German and that's the German pronunciation. I think in English it's Tarot. And I'm not a trained tarot specialist. The same way how I'm not a certified psychologist, but more like a Jung enthusiast. And I will work in this presentation with like the most common set, the Waite-Smith deck, which has all these very nice pictures that people are very familiar with. And I want to talk about this deck of cards and how to approach them in a Jungian way. Like if Jung would look at these cards and he looked at some cards, like what would he say? And what, let's say it's a fun exercise to engage with one's unconscious, because this is what Jung is about. Jung is about experiencing one's own psyche and becoming aware of things that one is not aware of. So bringing things out of the unconscious and integrating them into consciousness. And the tarot cards can help us with that in really interesting ways. So, because like in Jungian sense, when we look at the cards, what we see there very strongly is a theme of psychological transformation. Jung is completely about the transformation of psychology, of personality, of developing to, let's say, become more like oneself over time. This is really the staple of Jung. This is the journey of individuation to becoming oneself. And he even has this term for a psychological concept, or let's say entity, within one's psyche, which is a self. And the way to the self is individuation. And it's nicely depicted also in some of the cards. And I want to start with a quote from Jung. And it's pretty much the only quote there is about Tarot from Jung. It is on page 923 on the Vision Seminar, and he says, "The Tarot in itself is an attempt at representing the constituents of the flow of the unconscious, and therefore it is applicable for an intuitive method that has the purpose of understanding the flow of life, possibly even predicting future events. At all events, lending itself to the reading of the conditions of the present moment. It is in that way analogous to the I Ching, the Chinese divination method that allows at least a reading of the present conditions. You see, man always felt the need of finding an access through the unconscious to the meaning of an actual condition, because there is a sort of correspondence or likeness between the prevailing condition and the condition of the collective unconscious." We have a lot of stuff in here, and I will address all of this, like the collective unconscious, the correspondence of the moment, access to the unconscious. And yeah, that's pretty much all that Jung said about Tarot, but there's more. I want to start a little bit with the history. I here want to highly recommend a very interesting podcast from M.G. Dorian. It's called Creative Codex. There's two very awesome episodes on the history of Tarot. I will share the link after the event. In general, there is this very nice myth about the cards that they're actually like a very sneaky way to save some knowledge from the Romans that were attacking Alexandria and already destroying part of this big famous library with all these ancient scrolls and like the collected wisdom and knowledge of the ancient world. And they had this old book of wisdom, and they wanted to make sure that its contents do not get destroyed and do not disappear. So they put it in a card game called the Triumphs, which were 22 cards that were very detailed pictures that would like invoke the knowledge and the wisdom in them that is this condensed knowledge of the Egyptians. And that this was brought through the centuries, through the millennia, then to us. And it's, of course, a little bit hard to prove, but if we want to have proof and see like the earliest documentation that we have, it's actually a document from the church condemning it, linking it to gambling, even worse, like gambling. And it's also the proof that it hasn't really changed in over 600 years. That was in Italy. And interestingly enough, as it turns out, like the tarot decks that you can buy today with the 78 cards, historically has been two different card games. The one with 56 and the other with 22. This 22 are the triumphs, it's the lover, the high priestess, and so on. And the other ones are very, very similar to the card games that we have, like with hearts, spade, clubs, and so on. It follows the same pattern. And it seems like both have been used for divination and laying cards. And over time, they've been combined. And this brings us to the 78 cards that we have today, which makes a very, very nice deck. For my own journey into tarot, it's started basically a long time ago when I was reading really a lot of comic books. And when you really want to get into comic books, you encounter some authors and like the staples of really, really good writing. And interestingly enough, in general, they're British and they claim to be magicians. And there's Alan Moore and there's Grant Morrison. I was a huge, huge Grant Morrison fan. He turned 30, dumped his girlfriend and decided he's now a magician. And starting to write the most amazing pieces of fiction that are available. So I can highly recommend him also. And let's say the brand of magic he was subscribing to was chaos magic. So I dabbled a little bit in chaos magic. There's also a very awesome book called Advanced Magic for Beginners, which is a great guide into existentialism, which I can also highly recommend. And there it said basically you should learn at least one way of divination. And I did not have intestines of animals readily available, and I don't drink coffee. So I went with the cards because they have nice pictures and I'm a very visual person. And I had them lying around basically for a long time because you have 78 cards with 78 pictures, and they all have a meaning and they have a very rich meaning. And to learn them, it's not so easy. So they were laying around for a couple of years and was dabbling around. And last year, I really started to learn them earnestly. And I did this by learning one card at a time. And I already tried to do it in a kind of tarot way, in the sense of I would take the deck of cards every morning and I would shuffle it up to the moment where one card falls out. And this is basically already a message from the universe, like, this is the card for today. So I would reveal the card, look at the card, try to get like a feeling and understanding for it, then put it to the side and then head off and have my day. And very often I would not get like what the card means. And interestingly enough, over the day I would forget it. But when I come back in the evening, and it's the first thing that I see when I come back into my apartment, I'm like, oh, that actually describes the day very well. Either my day or someone close to me that I go, oh, that's interesting. Like I had no idea what this could mean, but actually pretty nice summary. And that's, let's say 80% of the time. And I started to tell so many people about it that many, many people around me started to buy tarot decks. Like my mother, for example. They do now the same. Like they draw a card every day, they look at it and try to learn it, understand it, which is fun, which is an awesome way to start a conversation, which card you have today, had today, and a little bit reflect on life and things that are happening to one. So this brings me to the Jungian approach. Why do the cards have a meaning? Because what I realized was one, like, oh, this summarizes my day pretty good. But sometimes it was that even looking at the pictures that I got a pretty strong, let's say, emotional reaction. I started to develop a certain emotional connection to certain cards. Still, I could list them. I could now pick them out and say, oh, those were cards that in very specific moments in my life that really concretized something, that symbolized something and condensed it. Hi, Markus here. If you want to go deeper into this topic, there's a full presentation available as a video recording with diagrams, quotes, and visuals for a deeper understanding. The recording is available as a one-time purchase on Gumroad, yours to keep. All right, back to the topic. Enjoy. So yeah, I can turn one pretty quickly superstitious. If you're not yet superstitious, it's a very quick way to get there. And I always get asked this question that I read all the books from Jung and spent so many years now investigating that. Like, oh, what's like the number one thing you learned? Like, what would you say combined it all? What is the essence of 57 books? And this realization I only had very, very recently, and this is why I then decided to make this event. And it has to do with the fact that you're really experiencing yourself. Like, the psyche and everything in your life, what's happening there, is first and foremost yourself. So when you look into the world, when you look inside, it's basically all you. And what it means to live, and living's one life, is really to experience oneself in all one's facets. And I have a very, very nice quote from Jung that summarizes this, which is, you cannot see the world without perceiving yourself. So in a certain sense, when I pick the cards and I look at the cards and I get a reaction to the cards, like I get associations, I get images, I make connections to my own life, it's not so much about the card. It could be about a lot of things, but first and foremost, it's about my reaction to the card. What does this card cause in me? Because it's always a question that's being asked. You have a random card, you reveal it, you look at it, and you're like, oh, that's weird, that's strange. And then you think about, okay, how could this fit? So there is an involvement of one's own psyche and attention and consciousness to that. And this effect that your psyche is being spread out into the world and you're perceiving it in a way, this is what Jung calls projection. And I have a quote here from Jung about that. Projection is an unconscious automatic process whereby a content that is unconscious to the subject transfers itself to an object so that it seems to belong to that object. And he says that's a very normal thing. Projections are completely normal. Everyone has projections. That's actually a way how we learn about ourselves. And this is where a lot of good discussions come from with other people. There's something that's bothering you. For example, a person, like you really don't like a person and you really don't like their behavior. And someone asks questions about that, trying to investigate what's going on there. So that is an investigation. Okay, why don't I like this person? Why don't I like this? This is an investigation to one's own reaction, one's own emotions. And there's a lot to learn. And Jung sees a lot of human endeavor and things that human beings have been doing as, let's say, a projection of the psyche. He says there's one thing to have, let's say, bright spots in the night sky. It's another thing to see their Scorpio or scales and all these other things. So this is then the question, okay, why do human beings see that? And he says a connection that's not necessarily only personal, saying like, oh, this is only your perception, this is only your, let's say, imagination, but rather, oh, we have this ancient part within ourselves, and this is reacting to a lot of things. And this is shaping a lot of our perceptions and ideas. And this is the archetypes that I will get into. And what it made click for me, at least for my approach and how I interact with tarot and what I wanted to talk about in this event, is what a member of this meetup group told me and also shown me, which is this internal family system. It's a therapeutic approach where it's super interesting. You basically can take a group of people and you say, okay, this person now is my father. This is my fear of failure. This is my first girlfriend. And the people don't actually know these persons or know how to act. But then they start doing something. They try to kind of embody it, but they don't really have the knowledge. So it is more that you perceive yourself seeing those persons change and shift and doing something. And he showed me then the same thing with basically blocks of wood, which would make the same thing. And he said, okay, put them like how you feel they should lie. And should it be upright? Should they lay down and angle to this and so on? So I did it then. And then he would start moving these things. And he asked, okay, how does this feel? What does this cause? And I'm going like, oh, okay. It's not about the things. It's not about the objects necessary. It's really about the relationship one has to them and the perceptions that one has and the reaction that causes within oneself. This is this part of perceiving yourself and becoming aware of your own psyche. And this is already the first step of integration. It's becoming conscious of things. And this is incredibly, incredibly difficult to become aware of the things we're not aware about, that we're unconscious about. And Jung says that psyche has a lot of tricks how to do that. And it can be dreams. It can be weird life circumstances through synchronicities. Or it could be something like a tarot deck that shows us a picture that causes something within us and brings us to think. Because thinking, reflecting, this is already a form of integration. It's about binding things together, bringing them to light, and being open for the things that we do not know and that we do not understand. So this is also this random element of tarot that makes it interesting. And one really, really interesting approach is if you would, for example, lay cards for another person, you can tell the person to think of a question. And they don't tell you the question, but you lay the cards for them. And you go like this, this, this. And you could start talking about the cards and they will get a feeling like, oh, they're talking about me. The cards, they're fitting so well. Yeah, they're fitting in a sense because they're fitting to your psychology. This would be the Jungian approach. But we will also talk about additional approach afterwards that it's not maybe so random what's happening there. So when we have the tarot cards, basically we have these two sets of cards that I talked about, the 56 and the 22. The 22 being the triumphs that are with this ancient mythological history and ancient wisdom and book of wisdom and everything. And if we would see it through a Jungian lens, we would see in a lot of minor arcana, this is these 56 cards, a lot of, let's say, common situations in life. For example, I fear the Four of Staffs, just a random card, which is about celebration. So this is something that one can pretty much identify with, because these are situations that are happening in life, or like the Eight of Cups, which means looking for a missing part of a relationship or a missing relationship. And then we have the major arcanas. Those are with the text at the bottom. For example, oh, this is German. Oh, judgment, right? Those are archetypes. Jung calls archetypes strong archetypical images, situations, things that happen so often in life that they became, let's say, in the history of humanity, that they became ingrained in our psyche and telling us and connecting us to a kind of human nature, going there really in the direction of evolutionary psychology. And what you have in the major arcanas is really a lot of Christian symbolism. So, for example, when you look at the lovers, this is a card here. You have Adam and Eve, you have the tree of wisdom and the tree of knowledge, and you have Gabriel. And yeah, and the card makes way more sense when you are this, at least a little bit versed in Christian symbolism. And it makes sense. The cards haven't changed so much in over 600 years. And back then, the Christian church was very strong. Even when they were against the tarot cards, still the symbols ended up on the cards, which makes sense because this was the common knowledge or language for people to speak. So why is it so important that the cards show common life situations? Because it's very easy to get lost in the subjective. It's, in a sense, the situation happened to one's life, birth, death, tragedy, luck, that seem one is the very first person to experience this. The first heartbreak, the first breakup, it feels like the end of the world. And it's that for every single person that ever lived and will ever live. So the way how I see the cards are the connecting one to kind of life situations. To remind oneself when one is a human being and one has really also a connection to other human beings and one is not really alone. And this was really a point that was very, very important to Jung and a staple of his therapeutic approach, for which I have a quote here. Loneliness does not come from having no people about one, but from being unable to communicate the things that seem important to oneself. So what he would, for example, do is take people seriously, which means when people come with psychological conditions and visions, convictions, all these different things, that he would listen and say, like, it's already often enough that one other human being is listening and taking it seriously, what another human being is saying. And some people became so overwhelmed with certain images, like archetypal images coming up in their psyche, where they thought, oh, I'm going completely crazy. I don't know where this is coming from. It does not make sense. I cannot connect it to anything, which makes sense because the collective unconscious, so the really deep layer of our psyche, is impersonal. It's eternal. It's hundreds, thousands, or millions of years old. It's not even unique to human beings. We have it also in animals. We have it in plants. We have their commonalities. And it can be completely removed from oneself and one's own life that it becomes overwhelming. And that way, he says, this can really break the psyche of people. And he says, this is, in his view, what's happening with psychosis or schizophrenia, going more in the direction of catatonia, like when people are being catatonic, people are really not available to the outside world anymore, that they have just flooded with his internal images. And he said he was able to bring people back by just connecting them, saying, oh, the things that you are seeing, the things that you are experiencing, you're not the first one. And he would show people alchemical pictures from hundreds of years ago. People became convinced and they felt at ease because they felt like they're still part of humanity. So this is what I see in the cards. I see life situations. And this is then contextualizing, like, oh, how could my situation that I am right now be similar to this archetypal situation? Like, what part of my life, if I draw the lovers, would be like a lovers situation of two people coming together and it feels like paradise, even though that there will be the fall coming up. So to dabble more in the archetypes and the archetypal ideas, interestingly enough, when Jung started to formalize archetypes, and this was already a pretty early ideas of his, early meaning late 30s, when he started to move on in this direction, this was one big part that convinced him to look deeper in the human psyche, that there are certain images coming up in a lot of cultures that are temporally and geographically very, very separated. So when you connect ancient Greek people with people in the Amazon, it's pretty clear that there was not really an exchange, at least that we know of. But still, when they tell a story about a hero and other situations, it's becoming very, very similar. So it follows the same structure and has the same symbolism. And this is when he came up with the idea of archetypes, that he says, oh, there are certain images within us that want to come out and they want to express themselves. And at the same time, we're looking for them and they speak to us. So archetypes in general are images that represent typical situations of great vital and practical importance. which have repeated themselves in the course of history innumerable times. And also, the primordial image or archetype is a figure, be it be a demon, a human being, or a process, that constantly reoccurs in the course of history and appears wherever creative fantasy is freely expressed. Essentially, therefore, it is a mythological figure. When we examine these images more closely, we find that they give form to the countless typical experiences of our ancestors. So when we dream, when we have visions, what we experience in our lives, very, very likely is to large degrees archetypal, and we're not aware of it. When we, for example, fall in love and we find someone new, this is kind of a play playing out, right? And if you have this situation, let's say multiple times, or you see it with other people, you become aware that it's a kind of pattern that repeats itself. And it's the same to a certain degree for everyone else. And that's interesting to see. But also like grief. You have, for example, these five stages of grief that everyone is going through, not necessarily in the specific order that they're in, but there's a lot of things that happen, and they happen again and again, and they happen to all human beings. And to become aware of that, there's already a lot of value in that. So, but the thing that I find very, very interesting is when you draw a card or you several cards, it's kind of a statement. It's a little bit similar when you're talking with someone and they bring up a topic because it's an outside perspective. It's something that is brought in and you have kind of integrate or make sense of and pay attention to. And it is similar with dreams. A dream also will give you an image. It will give you a situation and something that might be confusing, not completely understandable. And Jung dealt really a lot with dreams, and he has a really, really sophisticated way of analyzing dreams. And also some, let's say, basic premises where he says, this is how you interpret a dream. And one thing is really, because the psyche is showing you things you do not know and understand yet, you will have a pretty hard time interpreting them yourself. So this is why it's important to get another person. Similar when you are in a difficult situation, what most people do is they want to talk about it with another person. They want to hear themselves talk about it, but also they want to get a perspective from someone else. So even Jung, who is very, very knowledgeable about the psyche, about archetypes, about the symbols, about everything, even he would say that he was not able to interpret his own dreams. This quote deals with that. With my own dreams, I am just as helpless as anyone else. The dream falls in my own shadow where my light fails. It is just as though I had never heard of dream analysis. That is, of course, the maddening thing, that you are never equal to your own dreams. I have to begin at the very beginning and come to the most painstaking analysis. So when we talk to other people, there's a lot of things that we do not really anticipate. And it's valuable because they can give us a different perspective on things based on their own experience or just by paying attention and asking like, why didn't you do this? Have you thought maybe about this? And this is then actually pretty precisely dealing with those blind spots. And I see it that the cards can be used in a similar way, that when you lay the cards for yourself, that it can go like, have you thought about this situation in this way? Have you thought about maybe about this? So it is a kind of discussion that you can do with yourself through the cards, which is super interesting because, again, it's about exploring, mapping the psyche, paying attention, integrating things that one is not aware of. So similar as one runs a conversation with a person, it's possible to run a conversation with the cards, with yourself. But at the same time, it's pretty important to be open to the, let's say, idea that it's not completely random and, let's say, only your psyche that brings out the card. So if you really think about it in the sense of, this is a message from the universe, like I shuffled the card and one falls out, one specifically falls out. It had to be this card. So I have 78, but this card fell out. And this has to do a little bit with humility. It has to do with the fact that maybe I don't know everything, and very likely the things I don't know don't make sense, but they don't make sense to me. Jung says what our consciousness can do extremely well is it can exclude very, very well. So inside our consciousness, so the things we know, what we can do and so on, everything seems very logical, very coherent, and it's a kind of ideology in the sense of there exists nothing outside. So everything outside is not important, like only these things are important. But at the same time, our consciousness is incomplete. We hit our head constantly and we should be aware of the fact like, okay, it's not working. What we know and what we can do is it's not enough. So being open for, let's say, messages of the universe that are kind of pointing things out to you, like pay attention to that, is in a sense a good approach. And it has a lot to do with irrationality and accepting unusual things and being open to that and not being closed off. And Jung has a very nice story about that, where he had a patient. She was around 40. She had a very, very good education, very smart, capable, knowledgeable woman that was completely fixed in her track and her mind. And she had pretty bad neurosis. This is why she went to a therapist, but at the same time was not open to anything of the things that Jung was talking about, the psyche and development and all these different things. That went on for weeks and months until a very specific day. That day, she came to Jung and they were having the session and he's saying, I had this weird dream last night. And I dreamt of this golden scarab that visited me in my dream. And it seemed so real. And at that point, there's something ticking behind Jung at the window, on the window glass. So he goes to the window, he opens it. There's a little beetle there. And it's golden. And he shows it to her and says, oh, here's a scarab. And that blew her mind. Because it's absolutely, let's say, illogical, absolutely irrational what's happening there. But at the same time, undeniable. And he said from then on, the therapy was smooth and she got healed and everything. But there needs to be this foot in the door. There needs to be this openness of things happening. And very likely the things that one does not know and does not understand seem highly, highly, highly irrational. But at the same time, these are the things that help with the development and the changes and helping also to solve the problems of one's life. So this is what this quote is about from Jung. Archaic people show a much more balanced psychology than we do for the reason that they have no objection to letting the irrational come through while we resent it. And it has to do with things like divination and the occult and spirituality and all these, let's say, unexplainable things that can be put away very easily by science in a lot of ways. Maybe they can also be proven to a certain degree, but if someone is really common sense, rational, all these things, they can easily put it away as, let's say, nonsense. But there's a reason why human beings are really drawn to that and always have been. So we're talking about here a card game that's likely over 2,000 years old and still has a lot of meaning or connection for people. So it's happening something there that can be within our psyche, but that can also be to a certain degree outside of our psyche in the world. And this is where Jung had a concept very late in his life. And that concept is the one of synchronicity. Meaning, in contrast to causality, where you have A causes B causes C causes D, he says you don't have things moving necessarily through time, but if you would take a slice of everything that's now in this exact moment, everything would be related to each other just by virtue of being happening at the same time. So this is what this quote deals with to illustrate it. The Book of Changes, the I Ching, When I throw a handful of sticks, they will roll in all directions. Try to interpret this, and you will understand the importance of the moment. If you practice such a method to some extent, you will see how remarkably well the meaning of the I Ching matches the psychological situation. Meaning. It is not random that things happening at the same time. It is a little bit like temperature. So let's say the deck of cards, when I shuffle the card and one falls out, it's a little bit like taking the temperature of the room. Likely everywhere in the room, the temperature is the same, more or less. And it will be the same at the same time. If I open the window, it will be colder. If I heat up, it will be warmer. And the card then allows me kind of to get a measurement reading about what is happening right now in this exact moment in my life. And that is connected to everything else. Similar to the I Ching, when you have these sticks and you throw them or let them fall, and you look at the pattern, how they lay, you have this big book where you can then, that this is actually then the name of the book, the I Ching, and see, oh, this pattern corresponds to that. It's again, life situations, a little bit like the tarot cards. And when you throw them again, the situation changed. It's a little bit like with a river. You can't step in the same river twice because it already will have moved on, and it's similar with that. This is why when you draw a card, it's every time a different card, because it's the moment changed. There's something changed fundamentally in the world now, and the mold moved on. So he sees there that there's meaningful connections, that it is not random, but it's exemplifying something. And it can be related to one and one's individuation journey to a degree that there are specific situations in one's life that are happening towards oneself. But the things that are happening to one are not random. That there's a communication, let's say, happening through the deep parts of the psyche to the other parts of the world that can show one certain situations. Like, again, there's something you really need to know, and the world kind of points it out to you. So it's, let's say, a similar situation when you're really in a hurry. There will be a lot of things blocking you. Like, all the light traffic lights will be red, and a lot of other things, because the world is basically telling you to slow down. And the tarot cards can be approached to a similar thing, that they are kind of marker of the outside world, bringing you to awareness of something that you should really know about this specific point in time. And interestingly enough, all these ways of divination should work like this. So I went to a museum in Iceland. It was a museum of divination. It was somewhere in the north, very far away from everything. But it was super cool because they had tarot cards, they had the I Ching, they had even greeting the intestines of sheep, not real ones, but they were made out of plastic, reading tea leaves, reading coffee. It's all similar. You have something and you can read something about it, about the situation in your life. And this is why a card can make sense for your day, because it's happening at the same day. And the next day you will have a different card and then we'll talk about something different. So that's pretty cool, and human beings have been doing that forever, so it has to be something to that. So I've been talking a lot of, let's say, theoretically about the cards, but when I, as I said, wanted to learn the cards day by day, I had a pretty hard time to learn it. So for some people who are not familiar, that are maybe new, like, these are the kinds of advice that I could find and are also used to get kind of the meaning of a card. So in basis, you have four suits. They have swords, cups, pentacles, and the staffs. And the swords correspond to the intellect, so it will have to do something with rationality. Cups are about relationships because they hold things together. And also, when you drink with someone, you have cups. So it's like a social thing also very much. Pentacles about earthly success because they're coins. And the staff is about creative achievement, passion, bringing things into the world. So having this already helps a lot with understanding the meaning of a card. Like, oh, I have the Eight of Cups, which means this has to do with relationships. Then I would always watch, what is the time of day? how does the sky look like? Is there a lot of clouds? How does the water look like? Is it very wild? And water is the unconscious. So it's if it's wild there, oh, there's really a lot of things going on. And if there it's a lot of dynamics, there's a lot of energy in the situation. And you can see this then very good with the sky and watching the water. A problem that I really had to do with the court cards. The court cards are being the page, the knight, the queen, and the king. And I could never remember the meaning because they actually don't have so much many symbols. If you, for example, well, add a fun card, which is the nine of swords, you have a lot of things there. Like you have a guy crying in its bed, and it has to do with intellect and thoughts. Stuff that creeps up on you in the night. But if you have four knights and they just hold different things in their hands, that's a little tough to get. So the explanation that I found and that I found very convincing and now I can remember, you have a kind of progression there, which means when you have the page, it's like, oh, let's say you have the page of swords. Oh, it's a young boy wielding a sword. There's something new, a little bit naive idea or concept coming up. And the knight is storming out into the world, trying to establish then this idea. So it's really trying to prove himself, like a knight proves, tries to prove himself. The queen then has to do with, oh, this is about nurturing the idea. This is not only about Sturm und Drang and bringing things out, but really taking care of them. And then the king is authority, and this thought and this idea is now firmly established. So having this in mind really helps a lot with interpreting the court cards. And if you want to get one level above every suit, it runs from 1 to 10. And actually, if you look at them, they kind of tell a story with a humble beginning, with one of something, like one of staff, and then 10 of staffs, which is the culmination of this story of the minor arcana of this suit. And what also happens and helps a lot, if you really would try to get yourself into the situation. If I would be in this situation, how would I feel? And the Five of Cups, which I've drawn randomly, is a very good representation of that. Because it's a guy in a dark cloak, and he's looking down, and he doesn't seem happy, and he looks at those cups that are spilled over. So it's very easy to maybe miss a relationship and being sad about something like gone, broken, and kind of wasted, let's say, because you have different things. Yeah, you have red liquid, you have blue liquid. How would it feel like to be in the dark cloak, to look down at the things that are spoiled? But then also realizing the outside perspective that there are two cups behind him that he does not see. So there's a certain blindness to be a focus on the negativity and not seeing the positive things, like seeing the bridge in the background and seeing that there's a way to this castle, which is not only the deep river, but rather also there's a way that one does not see. So one should have the outside perspective, but also the perspective there. So it is really already looking at it, taking all the details and, yeah, looking what kind of emotions come up. And a thing that I had a hard time to learn about, when you have someone which is the back to you, this is not something negative. There's a card. Let's see whether I can find it. But is, I think, the six or seven of swords. They're in a boat and they're driving off. And it's actually pretty... Ah, here. It's a six of swords. It's actually a positive card because they're moving away from something and moving towards something. And there's a small child in there symbolizing new beginnings and new starts and all of that. So yeah, people venturing out will have their backs towards the person looking at the card. And which is then, let's say, the ultimate fun when you have the meaning of a card is when you have it reversed. That means upside down. This is then the negative of the meaning. You get first the meaning of the upright card and reverse. It's a reverse. So this already can help a lot. I have to be honest, I also used a little bit of ChatGPT and asking for the symbols and what they could mean. Because, for example, for the lovers, I had no idea that the tree on the right is a tree of wisdom. it's hard to know. Like, if you're not versed in Christian symbolism, it can really help to get there some perspective. But there's a lot of books, there's a lot of audiobooks, podcasts, everything. So if you really want to get into the cards and really want to understand them, there's really awesome resources in the world and the internet and everywhere in between. So this is all about singular cards. And then the next thing is about spreads. And the spread basically means that you have a certain number of cards with specific positions that you reveal one after the other. And they are then set into a focus. Let's say, for example, you have three cards, then it's past, present, and future. And then you think about not only this specific point in time, but rather like you create a whole story. And it's then interesting and can be kind of scary, even when you have six cards or more, that it can describe a thought, an idea that you have pretty well. But in a sense, again, projection, you're filling the world with your own psyche and you're perceiving yourself and already being aware of one's reaction and thoughts and associations that come up in one's fantasies are already a great start to psychological development and transformation, as the pictures and the arcanas and the movement there show a psychological transformation with its up and downs. All right. So as promised, I want to show you how to get your life card, which is really a fun little exercise. All you need is your birthday with day, month, and year. And it will work for Americans and non-Americans alike, because all we need to do is create a sum of all the numbers there. So have an example. Let's say someone is born today. What would be their life card? It's the 18th of February in 2026. And then the 1 plus 8 plus 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 6 creates 21. And you would try to get a single digit number. So that in this case would be 3. And 3 in the major arcana is the Empress. So I hope that's understandable. I would repeat it one more time. You get your birthday with day, month, and year. You have then all those single digits and you create a sum of all these digits. So there's also a little bit of math involved, or like a calculator. I studied engineering and I completely lost my ability to do calculations in my head during university because you become hyper paranoid during the tests and you just do everything with your calculator. Even if it's 1 plus 2, you should better check whether it's really 3 or you're just thinking it's 3. So, all right, you have now your number. And for those with decks, they can look through the decks. And for those who don't, I prepared here a little bit something, which is the first 10 major arcana cards with the question, why is the Wheel of Fortune there? That's the number 10. Shouldn't 10 be 1? And I asked this question because I had this exact situation. And it was said, oh, well, basically you have both. So if you have 10 as a sum, you have the Magician and the Wheel of Fortune, which can be quite a fun. But yeah, otherwise, based on your number, and you have either the Magician with 1, the High Priestess with 2, the Empress with 3, the Emperor with 4, the Hierophant with 5, the Lovers with 6, the Chariots with 7, Strength with 8, the Hermit with 9, or the Wheel of your Fortune with 10. This would conclude the presentation part of the event. And I would like to thank you all. And now I'm very curious about your life cards and also your thoughts, ideas, and knowledge, because I'm pretty sure we have highly skilled tarot card readers and practitioners here that can teach us new things, bring us insights, and so on. So that would be all. And yeah, thank you very much. This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. If you liked today's presentation, consider joining others in supporting the help desk with a donation on buymeacoffee.com. And if this episode meant something to you, share it with a friend. I help others to find this podcast more easily by rating it in the podcast app of your choice. And of course, you're more than welcome to join the live discussions after the presentation part during the events. The links are in the description. See you next time.